Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good morning. This is Russ Johnson. We have a special broadcast this morning, and we're dialing in to talk to some people who are already online and expecting us to show up and do a presentation. Let's see how we can do this. Oops, too many numbers here. Let me back this up. One second. 954-947-5497 to get us online with the other people.
Joining conference now.
This
has been muted. To unmute yourself, press the star key twice.
2022.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning,
everyone,
sir.
Welcome to our daily quantum energy information and education call. We do these calls 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. And the objective of these calls is to educate and to, you might say, pass along good information about health and wellness. We talk about quite a few things on these calls. We share information about international law on Tuesday. We have international lawyer David Williams that joins us. Today, we're going to have Russ Johnson, who's an internationally known radio announcer, and Jillian Green, who is she's a person that has been here before a long time. She shares with us experiences from hundreds and thousands of years ago through her innate ability to connect to the past, and also we've talked about future events. So I see that Russ is here. I'm going to unmute Russ.
It's off.
And Russ, good morning. Good afternoon. You're on the East Coast. How are you today?
Fine, sir. How are you today? How was your weekend?
Oh, great. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can get this party started.
Okay, I would like to say that this morning, if you don't mind, Jillian was not available, so I apologize for that. But I do have some clips by her that I can play, you know.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is just go over some information that the Pentagon has released recently. People have been listening to the Pentagon, I guess, since 60 Minutes, the UFO deal. And there's so much information. This is really over the top in terms of being ubiquitous. It's all over the place. That's a good word for, that's an explanation of ubiquitous, if you will. So what I want to do, if you don't mind, Nate, we'll just get right into what's being discussed and what will be discussed and what will be known, ladies and gentlemen, as the biggest story, biggest history that planet Earth has ever experienced in the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, okay? It's all coming to the head, and it's going to be awfully, awfully big. So, but I want to start off saying there's a fundamental kind of spirituality to all of this, and I would like to just talk about some of the Dalai Lama was talking about the other day. He has a new book out called Beyond Religion, and he says it this way.
From His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Beyond Religion, Ethics for a Whole World. Introduction. I am an old man now. I was born in 1935 in a small village in northeastern Tibet. For reasons beyond my control, I have lived most of my adult life as a stateless refugee in India, which has been my second home for over 50 years. I often joke that I am India's longest staying guest. In common with other people of my age, I have witnessed many of the dramatic events that have shaped the world we live in. Since the late 1960s, I have also traveled a great deal and had the honor to meet people from many different backgrounds, not just presidents and prime ministers, kings and queens, and leaders from all the world's great religious traditions, but also a great number of ordinary people from all walks of life. Looking back over the past decades, I find many reasons to rejoice. Through advances in medical science, deadly diseases have been eradicated. Millions of people have been lifted from poverty and have gained access to modern education and health care. We have a Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and awareness of the importance of such rights has grown tremendously. As a result, the ideals of freedom and democracy have spread around the world, and there is increasing recognition of the oneness of humanity.
Okay, so that's the beginning of what we know is a nice book. You need to get that book. It's called Beyond Religion. He goes into it, and I won't go in through all of it today because it's really comprehensive, and it's simple in terms of ethics and moral principles. So as Jesus said in the book, love thy neighbor as you do yourself. So you have to begin to share energy and effort. But anyway, he goes on to say a lot of things. But anyway, I want to get back to George Green. George Green is the husband of Jillian Green. He crossed over not too long ago, and they were married maybe 15 years or so. But he was, for 40 years, he was out on the stump chasing aliens, if you will, doing alien research all over the world. He had made millions and millions and millions of dollars as an investment banker, doing buildings, building shopping centers and big buildings and even cities all across the country. But George somehow ran into alien activity back when he was in the Air Force in the 60s. And ever since then, he had that bug that he couldn't shake it off. So he had to just get out there and chase them and do a whole lot of homework. As a matter of fact, the Palladians, which is another alien being from the Pleiades, okay, and from the Pleiades there are many Palladians, but he had been visited by a couple who had him do some writings. But anyway, here's what George Green is saying about ethics, moral principles, and the soul energy.
I mean, that's got me in trouble in Billy.
I presume that you are not in a position to help us meet Billy.
No. Well, Billy doesn't want to meet anybody. You already met somebody.
My impression.
What's his name down at, supposedly his liaison might be.
Yeah, we did.
But I don't know if he'd help you or not either. But, you know, Billy.
No, I know Michael, you know.
Michael Horn?
Yeah, well, I know Michael.
You know, they got mad at
me.
He's
tried, but we haven't.
No, I published the Talmud of Emmanuel over there, and they got all mad about that because I didn't put the German in it. Yeah, I don't know if you understand the original. When I got the Talmud, we had a college kid translated from that High German, that Schweizer Deutsch, into English. And my wife and I took the documents over. I mean, this is even another more strange. We just took the documents over here, and I sent out a whole bunch of copies to people. One of them was to a guy named, he's in California. I'm going to his name on that thing. Anyway, he reprinted it, and they changed some stuff around. And he was channeling so-called Hatton. And the information we got was that was really good stuff. And I dropped $500,000 and got a divorce, actually about $1 million, and got a divorce over that thing because we thought they were really connected with, you know, that group, and it turned out to be a big swindle.
Oh, man.
Anyway, they published the Talmud, their version of it. Well, my wife and Jim Deardorff worked on it for 2 years. Well, now we got another problem that stepped in. That was my ex-wife. I've only been married a few months, just so you know. But my ex-wife and I, we spent 20 years running around the world, you know, playing the game. But when we met Billy over there, we kind of made agreements together. Well, what was the problem with the Talmud? That was the teachings of Emmanuel or Christ, right? Well, where did Christ go and where is he now? Well, we became in contact. Now that stops the whole story again, doesn't it? With
meaning,
the Christ being Emmanuel, who calls himself Sananda right now. Then we got the information on the translation of the Talmud, so then we did it, and we said, why do we want to put the German down? Because Billy wasn't responsible for that. That was the Greek priest, Rashid, who did the translation from Aramaic into Schweizer Deutsch. There wasn't any copyright. It wasn't Billy's anyway in the first place. So what we did is then we were working on doing the translations. Then we were in contact directly with the Christ being energy. It's kind of like what I did, the Nostradamus material with Dolores Cannon. You familiar with her?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I didn't know you did that.
Dolores Cannon couldn't talk to anybody. She was stutterer all the time. And she sent me the manuscript. I so read the manuscript, and I told Desiree, I says, you know, this is pretty interesting. Let's check it out. So we made a contract. We published Dolores Cannon's first book, Conversations with Nostradamus, Volume 1 and Volume 2. I then set it up because we had a place in Beverly Hills. We got NBC and CBS to do our features on it.
Yeah, this guy was too much. I tell you, George was. I used to interview him back in the 90s, 91, 92, when I was doing the American Radio Networks. I was on 30 stations across the country, and I was doing some programs on UFOs and UAPs, if you will. And I kind of stepped away from it after a while, but that's what I'll get into my story later on. But George Green, if you want to see more information about what this guy was doing, a magnificent job he did for 40 years and research. Now, he did make millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars as an investment banker, and he spent all of that money, or a lot of his money, traveling all over the world, talking to people who had been approached, who were contactees, if you will, people who have been approached by aliens and say, hey, listen, I need you to do X, Y, Z, or as a matter of fact, they met with Eisenhower, too, the president of Eisenhower at Holloman Air Force Base in 1952, but I'll get into that in a bit. But there are a lot of agreements that the aliens have come to this planet to help us, to observe us, number one, and to help us become better people. And they did with the Germans back in the 30s, before World War II started, and gave them a lot of information, and we'll get to that, too, in a bit. But George Green always talks about soul energy, and if you want to see more of what he has and the research documents that he has done for us with other people, like Dolores Cannon he just talked about, then go to nohoax.net. nohoax.net and get some of that information and do a lot of research, because there's so much material that I've come across in my 40 or 50 years looking at some of this or more, that I'm just trying to keep it simple but yet give you an idea of what's coming. That's why the Pentagon has now said at some of the stuff that's going on. But here's George again.
Exists right now and what we're creating. And it's not only the we, it's everybody else that's involved in their thought processes that is being coalesced from the creation in order to try to figure a way to come back out of this with the least destruction to the soul energy.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And the soul has to wake up and say, wait a minute, there's something above me. See, the ego keeps you back down to the me, I, and all that kind of stuff. We're all together. I love you all.
Absolutely.
We don't care. We're all one.
Yep, you got that right. Now, even the aliens coming to this planet, and I know about a dozen different species that I've done some research on, the Greys, the Palladians, the Nordics, the Tall Whites, the reptilians and so and on and on and on. I mean, you get a book on this, but start doing research, please. Go to Google some of this, because there's a lot of information. As a matter of fact, I will address some issues with a guy, Dr. Stephen Greer, and he has a website called the Disclosure Project. Again, the Disclosure Project, and tons of it. Now, he's been out there, and I'll bring him up in just a moment, because you need to know who he is and how accomplished this guy is in terms of researching the issues of alien abductions. Now, let's go back a bit. This all came before, if you will, back in even 1938. There was Orson Welles did a show called The War of the Worlds, and everybody was frightened, stunned, because no one expected that to happen. You didn't have people talking about alien abductions or the aliens coming to this planet. And he did a program which totally frightened millions and millions of people throughout the world.
On the evening of the 30th of October, 1938, Orson Welles directed and narrated a radio adaptation of The War of the Worlds, the novel by H.G. Wells, as part of the Mercury Theatre on the Air. Despite its relatively low audience figures, the broadcast subsequently became famous for causing mass panic amongst American citizens. That the events were fictitious, but it was clear that these warnings had gone unheeded by many. Although the listening figures themselves were relatively small, news of the alien invasion spread through a country that was nervous about impending war in Europe. Within hours of the broadcast, the billboards in New York's Times Square were flashing with reports of mass panic caused by the radio play.
And as a result, when in the 50s or the 40s even, you know, the Roswell crash of July of 1947, the government, Harry Truman, who was president at the time, say, hey, we can't introduce the fact that they are a species, entities coming from other planets in the universe to visit us here on Earth, because that will happen all over again as it happened in 1938, you know, less than 10 years ago, right? We can't frighten the people to death. So we got to keep this thing a secret. So he made a decision with some of the other principals at the time that if aliens are on the planet, they are coming to the planet, we are getting this information, we can't tell the people because we don't want to frighten them to death. Now that was one thinking about that. But some others say people who put Majestic 12 together back in 1947, right, and put the people on the board, that they would control all the information of any alien activity, crash vehicles, whatever, sightings, whatever, and not tell anybody about it, because as in the motion picture, A Few Good Men, he says, because people can't handle the truth. That was one of the thinking. That was one of the thought processes on keeping it a secret. But anyway, let me jump up a little bit more. In terms of documented history, I'm not talking about if. So we're guessing at some things here, but documented history says that in 1952, some 5 years after that decision was made, there were many ships that came to Washington, D.C. and flew over the White House on two separate occasions, and this is some of that.
UFO researchers have long suspected that a government cover-up has prevented the public from knowing the full story about visitors from other planets. In 1973, for instance, the director of the FBI denied that his agency had ever investigated UFOs.
In 1976, the agency released more than 1,100 pages of UFO information that it had collected over many years. What forced the disclosure? It was the Freedom of Information Act. Tonight, in part three of our series, UFOs, the Best Evidence, George Knapp reports on other secrets that have been pried out of the government.
UFO skeptics often ask, if there are aliens visiting Earth, why don't they announce themselves by flying over the White House? The answer is, UFOs did fly over the White House twice. It happened in July 1952. As the New York Times reported, seven eerie glowing objects were spotted by pilots in the air and people on the ground. 12 different radar operators tracked the UFOs at speeds of up to 7,000 miles per hour. A week later, the objects were back again. When jets were scrambled, the lights either disappeared or zoomed away. The Air Force explained that what everyone had seen was a temperature inversion. To a man, the radar operators disagreed, but the official explanation is the one that stuck. Government explanations of UFOs are often just plain wrong. In 1965, thousands of people from Canada to Mexico watched a formation of UFOs maneuver in the skies. The Air Force said it was the constellation Orion, even though at the time Orion could only be seen from the other side of the planet. A UFO landing at White Sands Missile Base was said to be a sighting of the planet Venus, to which one UFO buff responded, it was unforgettable the night Venus landed on the gypsum flats of New Mexico.
You know, there's a lot of research going on, and a lot of people are talking about it's tons and tons of material. So I would say that, and I will address that in just a moment, in terms of looking at Stephen Greer. He was a physician at a hospital and head of the whole emergency room conglomerate, making serious money and having a lot of responsibilities. But in 1992, he stepped away from all of that, and he decided, and for the last 30, 35 years, that's all he's been doing, away from being a physician. And he's been researching, documenting, and tracking not only alien craft that have come to the fore, but even aliens that he has met here on the planet Earth and his experiences. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But the people who had Harry Truman gave the responsibility of collecting all of this stuff in 1947, and they called themselves Majestic 12. They also set up some bases, some facilities, if you will, where people could operate under extreme secret, way above top secret, way above the president or anybody else on planet Earth. And so that handful of people are in charge and have been in charge of alien abductions, alien retrievals, and at not only Area 51, but Groom's Lake and S4. Here's a little bit on Area 51.
It's called Area 51, or Dreamland. It's not on any map, but Nevada officially named the road leading to it Extraterrestrial Highway. It is about 100 miles north-northeast of Las Vegas, and about as hard to get at as a megabucks jackpot. Because even though every exotic jet flying today, designed to fight an apocalyptic World War III, was tested here, even though news of Area 51 is readily available on the internet, the Pentagon refuses to admit it exists.
Don't know for sure what made the ground move around 7 o'clock this morning, but seismologists say it was not an earthquake.
The pre-dawn rumbling that has confused millions of Southern Californians was the sound of their tax dollars flying by. NBC News has learned the sonic booms are coming from top-secret reconnaissance planes with revolutionary engines, codename Aurora. They look something like this. They have been tracked 5 times since last summer crossing the Los Angeles basin. Jim Morey, a Caltech seismologist, says the plane's sonic booms trigger his instruments every time.
When we see one, it seems like we see two of them coming in together, so it seems like two aircraft flying together.
Defense sources say the secret planes replaced the vaunted SR-71 Blackbird, retired in 1990. NBC News has been told the aircraft can fly at almost 5,000 miles an hour.
But the people who saw all of that, even the people who were in the Air Force or the pilots in the Army or Navy or wherever, they were not allowed to talk about that. Now, I was in the Air Force myself, and I was a controller, air traffic controller, and that was way back in the, a long time ago. Anyway, that was the duty and responsibility I had as a person to observe some of this information. And so, but anyway, there are a lot of programs out here. If you go to television, there's Gaia, there's Ancient Aliens, Cosmic Connections. I mean, so many. So you need to catch up with this information because, again, as I started the program, I say again, this is going to be the biggest story that has hit planet Earth in the last 400 or 500 years. It's going to top everything you could imagine when all of it rolls out, and it's a lot of information. So I'm not the first person to get on the radio and talk about it or a podcast, right? There's a lot of information out there. But even if we were to go back, let's say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there was a guy called Art Bell. He had an all-night show. And you can Google this and get this information. And he had millions and millions of people listening back 20 years ago, late at night, on the radio.
Very much for the story. I hope your book does well. Can you imagine the terror of that? Of being chained and watching your friend's head lopped off and getting that close yourself? That's what he went through. That's quite a story. I mean, homeless in Miami and then damn near headless in the Philippines. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you doing, Art?
I'm doing okay. This is Kate, right?
Yes.
Excellent, Kate. What can you tell us?
Well, I'm listening to you from KNZR, Bakersfield, California.
Yes.
I worked in Michelson Lab on China Lake Naval Base in the late 70s. And with what everybody's talking about, the stem cell research and the geneticists dying and the microbiologists, I knew one of these days I would be telling this story, and I feel it is necessary to do so right now.
Well, it's true. I mean, I've had I don't know how many stories about dead microbiologists. Now, maybe somehow the media just decided to start focusing on dead microbiologists, but it seems like there have been so many stories, Kate, that there's something to it, or am I wrong?
No.
No, he's right. But anyway, I want to get to another. I don't want to take all day to do this, but I'm giving you bits and pieces of a vision of how this all started and where we are today. Now, there's a book by Timothy Good called Above Top Secret. Now, it's pretty extensive. I think this thing was 700 pages long, whatever. Anyway, you may want to get this. He's a very accomplished, prolific writer, a top researcher, who wrote this book some years ago called Above Top Secret. And what he meant by that even the president of the United States could not get this information. Eisenhower, Kennedy, Carter, Obama could not get any of this information about the true nature of what's going on with UFOs, abductions, and aliens coming to this planet. Can you believe that? And even Reagan at one point they intimidated him and they gave him a little bit of information, but not much. But they shut him out, and this is what he had to say before he left the planet.
In our obsession with antagonisms of the moment, we often forget how much unites all the members of humanity. Perhaps we need some outside universal threat to make us recognize this common bond. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
So that was Reagan before he passed on, because he was shut out of a lot of information, but he knew some of the information that he was not willing to disclose to the masses of people through a radio broadcast or a press conference. So it's really interesting, is it not? Even JFK, it is said, and it's another book that I think if you want to know the real truth of it, here it is. It's called Kennedy's Last Stand, Eisenhower, UFOs, and Majestic 12, and the JFK Assassination by Michael E. Sella, S-A-L-L-A. You really want to get a lot of anything that Michael Sella has done in terms of research over the past 10, 20 years. You want to pick that up because it addresses the real issue. So I just want to get to, where was this? Oh, yeah, this is jumping around. But I don't know why. Where are we going? I must have moved something. But I was just getting to Michael and let him talk. But anyway, if you go to, he has a podcast on an ongoing basis, and it's at Exopolitics, politics, if you will. Excuse me, sorry. But you can even just Google his name, Michael Sella. And then I'm not going to get a drink of water here, because I have been, and before, I'm sorry about that. Maybe Nate may have a question or two. I've been going for about a half an hour. I don't want to waste all of your time on this, but let's do something. The Pentagon just released that information, and you need to hear it from the Pentagon.
Imagine a technology that can do 600 to 700 G-forces, that can fly at 13,000 miles an hour, that it can evade radar, and that can fly through air and water and possibly space. And, oh, by the way, has no obvious signs of propulsions, no wings, no control surfaces, and yet still can defy the natural effects of Earth's gravity. That's precisely what we're seeing.
Elizondo tells us ATIP was a loose-knit mix of scientists, electro-optical engineers, avionics, and intelligence experts, often working part-time. They combed through data and records and analyzed videos like this. A Navy aircrew struggles to lock on to a fast-moving object off the U.S. Atlantic coast in 2015. Recently released images may not convince UFO skeptics, but the Pentagon admits it doesn't know what in the world this is, or this, or this.
So what do you say to the skeptic? It's refracted light, weather balloons, a rocket being launched, Venus. In some cases, there are simple explanations for what people are witnessing, but there are some that are not. We're not just simply jumping to a conclusion that's saying, oh, that's a UAP out there. We're going through our due diligence. Is it some sort of new type of cruise missile technology that China has developed? Is it some sort of high-altitude balloon that's conducting reconnaissance? Ultimately, when you have exhausted all those what-ifs and you're still left with the fact that this is in our airspace and it's real, that's when it becomes compelling and that's when it becomes problematic.
Now, a lot of people who say they don't know what's going on, they really do, but they don't want to say everything that they know. So that's still being hidden. Or you have to discern exactly what a person is saying. Now, let's listen to some of the people who fly the planes to protect us, the people of the Navy.
That over beers we've sort of said, hey, man, if I saw this solo, I don't know that I would have come back and said anything because it sounds so crazy when I say it.
You understand that reaction?
I do. I've had some people tell me, you know, when you say that, you can sound crazy. And I'll be honest, I'm not a UFO guy.
But from what I hear you guys saying, there's something.
Yes. Oh, there's definitely something that, I don't know who's building it, who's got the technology, who's got the brains, but there's something out there that was better than our airplane.
The air crew filed reports. Then, like the mysterious flying object, the Nimitz encounter disappeared. Nothing was said or done officially for 5 years until Lou Elizondo came across the story and investigated.
We spend millions of dollars in training these pilots, and they are seeing something that they can't explain. Furthermore, that information is being backed up on electro-optical data, like gun camera footage, and by radar data. Now, to me, that's compelling.
Inside the Pentagon, his findings were met with skepticism. ATIP's funding was eliminated in 2012, but Elizondo says he and a handful of others kept the mission alive until finally, frustrated, he quit the Pentagon in 2017, but not before getting these three videos declassified. And then things took a stranger turn.
I tried to help my colleague Lou Elizondo elevate the issue in the department and actually get it to the Secretary of Defense.
Christopher Mellon served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence for Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush and had access to top-secret government programs.
So it's not us. That's one thing we know.
We know that.
I can say that with a very high degree of confidence, in part because of the positions I held in the department, and I know the process.
Mellon says he grew concerned nothing was being done about UAPs, so he decided to do something. In 2017, as a private citizen, he surreptitiously acquired the three Navy videos Elizondo had declassified and leaked them to the New York Times.
It's bizarre and unfortunate that someone like myself has to do something like that to get a national security issue like this on the agenda.
He joined forces with now civilian Lou Elizondo, and they started to tell their story to anybody who would listen, to newspapers, the History Channel, to members of Congress.
We knew and understood that you had to go to the public, get the public interested, to get Congress interested, to then circle back to the Defense Department and get them to start taking a look at it.
And now it is. This past August, the Pentagon resurrected ATIP It's now called the UAP Task Force. Service members now are encouraged to report strange encounters, and the Senate wants answers.
Anything that enters an airspace that's not supposed to be there is a threat.
After receiving classified briefings on UAPs, Senator Marco Rubio called for a detailed analysis. This past December, while he was still head of the Intelligence Committee, he asked the Director of National Intelligence and the Pentagon to present Congress an unclassified report by next month.
This is a bizarre issue. The Pentagon and other branches of the military have a long history of sort of dismissing this. What makes you think that this time is going to be different?
I mean, we're going to find out when we get that report. You know, there's a stigma on Capitol Hill. I mean, some of my colleagues are very interested in this topic, and some kind of, you know, giggle when you bring it up. But I don't think we can allow the stigma to keep us from having an answer to a very fundamental question.
What do you want us to do about this?
I want us to take it seriously and have a process to take it seriously. I want us to have a process to analyze the data every time it comes in, that there be a place where this is cataloged and constantly analyzed until we get some answers. Maybe it has a very simple answer. Maybe it doesn't.
Yep. Now, that report should be available if you go to Google, Congressional Investigation of UAPs, they are called now, or UFOs. That they finished that a couple weeks ago, and you might want to pull that up and look at that. I mean, that's a world of information there. Leslie Keene was a lady they talked about. That New York Times report that she, expose, if you will, a couple years ago, Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, Keane, K-E-A-N. She has a book, by the way, out. And if you pull the article up from the New York Times, you'll see what she wrote. And that was a revelation, if you will. But she has a book called UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials on the Record talking about UFOs, UAPs.
Let me give you an example. In the case of, we had a president years ago named Ronald Reagan, and he was briefed in a limited way on the subject, but with a psychological warfare objective to get him to support SDI, space, you know, the so-called Star Wars objects in space. And they're in a bubble. You know, I mean, Truman said, and then Clinton repeated, that the White House is the crown jewel of the federal penitentiary system. And that really is true. So everyone thinks that you come out of the, whatever, you know, a businessman like Trump or a peanut farmer like Jimmy Carter, and you become president and you have an absolute all-access pass. And that is true for conventional intelligence and military operations. But the unconventional ones, and the proper name of that is an unacknowledged special access project, USAP. In fact, there's a documentary that came out 3 years ago that's on Netflix, if you have Netflix, called Unacknowledged, that we did. It's globally, it's had over 600 million views that you can see. The new documentary is a follow-on to that one. But the unacknowledged special access projects is the proper military term for projects that are off the books, deep black, and no one is briefed on them who is not, doesn't have a need to know. So you would say, well, the president has a need to know everything, but those projects have arrogated to themselves the fact that, oh, no, you don't. And let me give you an example. I want to make this less abstract and more concrete for people. I was at the Pentagon briefing what's called J2, the Head of Intelligence Joint Staff. So you were in the military. So this is the guy who is the director of intelligence for the briefings for the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States. And he had asked to have a briefing by me and some of the people on my team because one of my team members knew him and had reached out. Before I went to the briefing, I sent him a document through courier that was a briefing summary, and the top document on it was a document that listed some of the code names and code numbers for those projects. Based on that, he recognized one of them. He wasn't sure what they did, and he contacted them. And basically, he was threatened. The first thing they said to him was, this is Admiral Tom Wilson, by the way, And Admiral Wilson was told, sir, you don't have a need to know. And he said, God damn it, how can I not have a need to know? I'm the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And they said, sir, we will not discuss this with you. When he continued to push on the matter, he was threatened with being demoted and having a star taken off his lapel. So you can imagine, by the time astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon, and I and some of our people walked into that office, because this happened before my stand-up briefing at the Pentagon, he was furious but scared. And so the public thinks that, you know, God is in heaven and everything is in orbit and everything is that we actually are living in a situation where the extreme secrecy Eisenhower warned us about, the worst of that has come to fruition. And frankly, no one is reporting that, certainly not the mainstream news media.
Well, that's Stephen Greer, the gentleman I told you who was a physician at ER, physician, head of that department at hospitals. But he stepped away to do research about 35 years ago. And so he has a website at the Disclosure Project. Go there, the Disclosure Project, and you'll see a lot of information that he has, a lot of research that he has done in the last 35 years. And he has a book that I'm holding in my hand called Hidden Truth, The Forbidden Knowledge by Stephen M. Greer, MD. And he talks about all of that in his book. So without me going through all of it, get the book, do your research, study to show thyself approved, a workman that needs not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. You got to go do your homework on this. It is the biggest story that will hit planet Earth, because it's so, tons and tons of things are happening. You can't get through all of it in an hour, but tons and tons of things are happening. Even the fact that when I talk about the book, Kennedy's Last Stand, if you want to know why JFK was killed and who assassinated him, this is what he said in his own words 1 week before he died.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
Yep. He said that a week before he was killed, and they decided to assassinate him. And I won't get in terms of who had him assassinated, but it's in the book, Kennedy's Last Stand, Eisenhower, UFO, MJ-12, the Kennedy assassination. And by the way, let me just close by doing this. Dr. Seller is a super researcher, a consummate researcher, a very prolific writer. So you would want to get his books. You really do. Anything is S-A-L-L-A. Anything you see, Michael, S-A-L-L-A, buy it. Quick, fast, and in a hurry. That's one. Two, when you talk about who has all of this information and who has done an incredible amount of research about all of these things. I mean, deep research, stuff that your senators and your congressmen and even your presidents don't know, then Greer has it, Michael, Stephen Greer. So go to his website, the Disclosure Project, and here's what he says, Stephen Greer.
Well, yes, I mean, I'm a medical doctor, but when I was younger, I had a sighting of a UFO, and it coincided with my uncle designing what's called the lunar module, which is the thing that put the first man on the moon. Grumman, which is now Northrop Grumman, had the contract to design the machine that landed with Neil Armstrong. So I had an interest in space, and then I had a sighting, not unlike what the Pentagon recently released, where I grew up in North Carolina. And of course, I knew immediately what I had seen was a very unusual object. So it ignited a lifelong interest in this, and a whole lot of things evolved over time. My uncle retired, and over a period of a few years in the 90s, I began to do further research and start an organization to go out and do reconnaissance of these UFOs and set up a set of protocols to make some kind of interactive contact with them. And we did. And that was in 1992. That got on the radar scope of the intelligence community. The head of Army Intelligence approached me and basically said, what the hell do you think you're doing? Basically, we had cracked the Rosetta Stone for communicating with these objects and their occupants. And it ended up on the front page of the Pensacola paper in March of 1992, and that kind of hit some red line buttons at the Pentagon and CIA. So I got contacted by those folks. Some of them were friendly to what we were trying to do. Some were hostile. But the ones who were friendly helped me build a network that now is around 980 military, corporate, aerospace mainly, and intelligence officials who have information about these projects. And that led to me in 1993 briefing Bill Clinton's CIA director, R. James Woolsey, and a few other people, Senate Intelligence Committee members. And I was doing this as a doctor, sort of shuttling up from North Carolina, where I was chairman of emergency medicine at the hospital, up to D.C. So it sort of got organically sort of overtook my medical career, but over a number of years. So I'm retired from emergency medicine now. I'm not in the ER. I'm working now to try to bring this information and, more equally importantly, the technologies that are behind these spacecraft and things that are being reported on CNN now, because what the public isn't being told is that we have, in fact, figured out how those objects operate, and that would give us an entirely new and advanced civilization where we would not need fossil fuels, oil or gas or coal or nuclear power. So it's a very big story. Most people think the secrecy around this is because the government has just been incompetent. That's not true. That narrative is a false narrative. The true narrative is that, I will quote from a top secret memo released during the past few decades, but it was dated 1951, and it stated that the subject was the most classified matter in the U.S. government, exceeding the classification of the development of the hydrogen bomb, I'm quoting. So that document, by the way, is up on our website, SiriusDisclosure.com, S-I-R-I-U-S Disclosure.com. So that this entire investigation that I started sort of as an interest when I was a young doctor eventually overtook my medical career, and now I'm sort of working full-time trying to get this information out to the public because it's very critical. In order for our civilization to move forward significantly, we're going to have something better than solar panels and windmills. And the good news is we have it. The bad news is there are sociopaths who are in super secret projects that don't want us to have it. And our civilization has been greatly harmed, not to mention our environment and biosphere. So a lot of people think this is about aliens. I said, no, it's not about ETs. It's about humans and how are humans going to get out of the conundrum we're in, which is a very serious problem, and move forward as a civilization instead of sliding backward.
It is about the black ops people who've taken hundreds of trillions of dollars and putting people on the moon, secret space program been operating for many decades, on Mars and other planets in the universe. I don't want to go through any more, except that it's so much. It'll blow your mind when you get the real picture of this. But I want to give an applause to Dr. Stephen Greer, head of Project Disclosure. He's producer of the documentary called Unacknowledged. If you haven't seen that, please, please, please pull that up. Watch it. He and other public officials are calling upon the United States government to disclose to the world that they have been in possession of craft UFOs. They have back engineered the findings and have the cell phone and personal computers and the internet and other advanced technologies, all created by the back engineering of that. Like the book by Colonel Philip Corso, The Day After Roswell, if you want to pick that book up, and you know that he was in charge of the back engineering to this, to Westinghouse and Grumman and Douglas, you know, all the big boys are doing this. It's a big subject. It's a big subject. So I close by saying, for who knows why we come to a place for such a time as this, as in Esther 4:14, and who knows whether or thou hast come to the kingdom for such a time as this. As Jesus said, all the things I have done, you can do and more. So it's really big. It's really, it's all over the place. And it's the biggest secret being held on planet Earth about the UFOs and the aliens that are visiting us from different parts of the universe. A lot of stuff. But anyway, Nate, I've been talking for all too long. You go back to you. You got it right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, Russ. It's quite interesting, to say the least. This is information that we rarely hear about unless you get on. I guess we see and hear a lot of it on what's called sci-fi, science fiction. And now it's kind of being revealed that a lot of that science fiction wasn't science fiction at all. It was science reality. So anybody that has a question, we only have about another 8 minutes. If one someone wants to make a comment or has a question, press **, and we will. Okay, I see Dora is unmuted. Go ahead, Dora.
Wow, 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 wow. I thank you to the gentleman, and I need his name again. I know you've told us his name every week, and I didn't write it down.
That's all right. Women have a tendency to forget me anyway. But anyway, it's probably...
No, I doubt that. But go ahead.
But I have a website, Project Disclosure. That's my website.
I wrote
that's
down. I'm so, I'm just
and
so
then,
excited.
But if you want to see a little bit of history of what I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 decades, besides chasing aliens, you can always go to myhistorypage.com, myhistorypage.com. And my telephone number is there, so if you ever need to call me, call me. Go ahead. Any other questions?
I just want to say that I saw that movie when I was a little girl, and I'm telling my age, but that's okay. I saw the War of the Worlds movie, and it for the rest of my life up until today, I have been on this walk, and you are just the most exciting person, you and Jillian. And so, yeah, I've been having, over my life walk, different things have happened to me that let me know that we are not alone. And as a kid, of course, you don't believe that. You don't know anything. But I've heard, like, said things out loud playing as a kid, and I would hear an answer. And I've shared before that I heard a voice telling me that I asked myself, why am I not like these kids? And I don't know, but I heard something that said, because you are different. Well, I have been different my whole life. Anyway, I worked in the Pentagon when I was maybe 20, and because I went to American University, and I quit. It was just so weird. Some of the people there were very strange acting people. Now I fast forward to today that I feel like there's a reason why. Maybe there's some of those people that you're talking about were employed there. Yeah. Fast forward to 2003, just like any other things that I felt was happened in my life, happenstance, I came back to Los Angeles because my daughter had just graduated from USC Law School. Didn't want her to stay out here alone, feeling like, okay, mom, I'm single now, I'm laid off, came out here. 3 days later, I got hired by Gene Barry, the star of War of the Worlds. That's weird. I watched him my whole life. Yeah, so we talked about the movie. And
we only have a couple of minutes. He said we had 8 minutes, and I got to get out of here in another 5. But anyway, okay. You have my number. You can always call me and have any length of discussion. It's myhistorypage.com. But let me say that people need to catch up with these motion pictures because a lot of truth happens to be inculcated in the motion pictures, the ETs, right? Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Artificial Intelligence,
exactly.
War of the Worlds, The Minority Report, Back to the Future, Inner Space, Men in Black, Fallen Skies. And if you haven't seen Taken, it's a 13-hour miniseries that Steven Spielberg put together. And you can, if you can't get it on YouTube, then you can always go to Amazon.com and punch it up and get that whole package and watch all 13 hours. But 98% of everything in that Taken series, it's right on target. It's true. So it's a lot of information out there, a lot of books, a lot of shows on radio, television, on the internet, Cosmic Connections, Beyond Belief by George Norrie. I mean, you got David Wilcox, all of these people out there who are researching this and giving you the information that they have been uncovering for all these many years. But anyway, that's it. I see we got 4 minutes left. Go ahead, Nate.
Russ, we have Bernetta Moore that's unmuted also. Go ahead, Bernetta.
Thank you, Nate. Right before I got on the call today, there was a program on called Superstition, and it was breaking down how people have developed all of these superstitions. And then they started talking about alien abductions and all of these things. And this is right before the call. And then I started thinking about working with Pan Am for 13 years. It was common knowledge. All of the pilots talked about seeing UFOs. I mean, it was not a secret. It wasn't anything hidden. They talked about it because they spent their lives 40,000 feet in the air, you know, just sitting for hours and hours. And they could tell you stories about so many things, you know, being in all of these foreign places and seeing all of this stuff. So we all need to open every box and hidden thing, because it is real and it's amazing. So thank you for taking your time and sharing with us. God bless you.
Sure. Yeah. Nate?
Okay. One last call, and then we are definitely about out of time. Hold on. Let me find it. I think it is. Wait a minute. Disappeared. Oh, here we go. 973-961.
Hey, peace and blessings, family. Nate, thank you. Peace and blessings to Brother Russ and Sister Julian. This is Forrest Nance from Grown Folks Talk and Express Yourself. Russ, I just want to say once again, thank you for that wonderful presentation that you gave, brother. And I still have still buzzing after you came on to my show, on my podcast. So I look forward to speaking to you in the future, brother. And keep up the good work. I just wanted to give you a shout out. And Russ, I know how it is when you say, I got to go. So I'm going to let you go, brother. I ain't going to hold you up. But thank you once again. And once again, Nate, thank you so much for bringing on Brother Russ.
Okay. All right. Well, we are at the top of the hour. Russ, I'll let you close it out, and we'll be on our way.
Okay. Well, listen, it's what can I say? Except that I would say, do your homework, right? Research, because most of this stuff, if you really dig deep in the annals of all of this, it's many things that I didn't even mention, wouldn't dare to mention, because they think I've been smoking something this morning. But it goes so deep, and it's so, it's so involved, and it's stretching one's imagination that you'd be surprised. But we are for some big surprises between now and full disclosure, which may come in the next 5 years or 10 years or whatever. But there's a lot of stuff happening on planet Earth, and I really appreciate you giving me the time to take a minute or so. I'd like to take one more minute, because I'd like to say that it's all about Christ consciousness now. In spite of whatever you see around you, whatever the challenges that you're going to have believing this stuff, and being, some people feel threatened when they hear some of the other information that's coming forward, because we're in serious times. But it's all about Christ consciousness, right?
So what are we to do? Where are we to turn for help? Science, for all the benefits it has brought to our external world, has not yet provided scientific grounding for the development of the foundations of personal integrity, the basic inner human values that we appreciate in others and would do well to promote in ourselves. Perhaps then we should seek inner values from religion, as people have done for millennia. Certainly religion has helped millions of people in the past, helps millions today, and will continue to help millions in the future. But for all its benefits in offering moral guidance and meaning in life, in today's secular world, religion alone is no longer adequate as a basis for ethics. One reason for this is that many people in the world no longer follow any particular religion. Another reason is that as the peoples of the world become ever more closely interconnected in an age of globalization and in multicultural societies, ethics based on any one religion would only appeal to some of us. It would not be meaningful for all. In the past, when peoples lived in relative isolation from one another, as we Tibetans lived quite happily for many centuries behind our wall of mountains, the fact that groups pursued their own religiously based approaches to ethics posed no difficulties. Today, however, any religion-based answer to the problem of our neglect of inner values can never be universal, and so will be inadequate. What we need today is an approach to ethics which makes no recourse to religion, and can be equally acceptable to those with faith and those without, a secular ethics.
Nate, thanks very much for the time. Really appreciate you.
Okay, thank you, Russ. Okay, well, looking forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. I myself have got to get on a webinar, and then, well, I'm already late. So thank you, everyone, for being here. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow. So have a good day.
I am confident that it is both possible and worthwhile to attempt a new secular approach to universal ethics. My confidence comes from my conviction that all of us, all human beings, are basically inclined or disposed toward what we perceive to be good. Whatever we do because we think it will be of some benefit. At the same time, we all appreciate the kindness of others. We are all by nature oriented toward the basic human values of love and compassion. We all prefer the love of others to their hatred. We all prefer others' generosity to their meanness. And who among us does not prefer tolerance, respect, and forgiveness of our failings to bigotry, disrespect, and resentment?
And that's from the book by the Dalai Lama, Beyond Religion. Thanks for listening. See you next time right here on Blog Talk Radio.